I appreciate that song. As I was sitting here listening to it, I felt a presence of the Spirit. I'm happy to be here this morning and to be able to meet together with those of you who have the testimony of the Lord working within their life. We had a great, I feel like it was a very successful ministers' conference this year, as we spent a lot of time and had presentations and discussions, which made me hopeful for the day that we live in, to help to prepare us to be that much more ready to take the gospel, to search out those who are searching, and to be ready to share the good news of it. We come here, and I hope that you've come here because you see a lack within you and a need for the Lord to work within you. And we recognize that He does that through His Spirit and using His servants to bring those messages, those things to make you contemplate. We have a need for the Lord to direct us and to speak to us and to move within our hearts. And He has an expectation of us that when we come here that we would do so ready to hear Him. And so I would ask that you would say a prayer for yourself as our brother would stand, and for him, that the message that is upon his heart that the Lord has put there would be applicable to you, that you would hear it and apply it to your life. And so I would give you our brother and elder Andy Brown.
Thank you, Adam. I too appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning with you. As usual, I have a lot of thoughts. Don't know if I have the ability to communicate those in a way that we can understand them. Oftentimes when I prepare a sermon, they kind of fall into categories. And I'm going to ask you today, if you would, if you follow along in your scriptures, I have a little bit of reading to do, which I don't do real well, as well as this one would have to fall into that category of a little bit abstract. In other words, we're going to try and get some meaning out of this in comparison at the time of Christ, in comparison to our own day, our own selves individually. First of all, I have to make a little disclaimer. If this tie does not match his shirt, it's not my wife's fault. Because after I got to church here, she's like, I don't think that tie matches that shirt. I'm like, well, I tried the best I could. I'm sorry. So it was either that or no tie at all. So I thought it was black, and she tells me it's not. So, but anyway, just to let her off the hook there. I would like to begin this morning in the 16th chapter of Matthew, in the first verse, and read a few verses there. Sermons like this one for me is a little bit more difficult to prepare, because sometimes I feel like the Lord's not letting me in on what it's going to be about. But by the time it's through, then I can see, you know. In the 16th chapter there, we'll start in the first verse, and we're going to read the first four verses, and it says, "And the Pharisees and also the Sadducees came and tempting, desired him that he would show unto them a sign from heaven," talking about Christ. "And he answered and said unto them, when it is evening, ye say, and this is Christ's words, it will be a fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. O ye hypocrites, ye desire the face of the you discern the face of the sky, but ye cannot discern the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given unto it but the sign of the prophet Jonah. And so here, those that weren't really believers, you know, they were the religious authorities of the day, and they were intentionally trying to catch Christ in some kind of place that they could point out a fault or an untruth, you know, which we know there was no untruth, and he wasn't going to be caught in something like that. And so he called them on it and said, you know, you can see the sun coming up and you see the pretty sunrise and you can predict how the weather's going to be today. And same thing when the sun's going down. But yet you can't look around you and see where you're at. And throughout this time we have to share this morning, you know, again, my desire for you today is that, you know, don't look at your neighbor, look at yourself, you know. Ask yourself the question, you know, what kind of conversation would Christ have with me today? Would he say, hey, Andy, you know, you can look at the water and see that it's calm, or you can go in the woods and know which way the wind's blowing or if it's going to rain, but you can't look around you and see where you're at today in history, where you're at today spiritually in your own life. So let's ask ourselves these questions this morning. I'm going to continue on by starting in verse 5 there and continue down a few more verses. And when the disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. And these are all little parables, little things to make us think. And which Jesus perceived, said unto them, O ye of little faith, why reason ye among yourselves because ye have brought no bread? Do ye not yet understand, neither remember the 5 loaves and the 5,000, or how many baskets ye took up, neither the 7 loaves and the 4,000, and how many baskets you took up? Christ is calling them out. He's saying, you know, you guys are sitting over here all worried that you didn't bring any bread. But just the other day or the other month, you were there when we had 5 loaves and fed 5,000. Why are you concerned about this? And it says, how is it that ye do not understand that I speak is not concerning bread, that ye should beware of the leavening of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? So this conversation really is in continuation of what he told the Sadducees and Pharisees here. And he's saying, you're worried about physical bread to eat. I'm trying to tell you something else. I'm trying to talk to you about leavening. Who's a baker in here? What's leavening, Mary? You know, that's kind of an old word, isn't it?
It
makes the bread rise. Yeast, huh? It makes the bread rise. And so how is that the comparison with the Sadducees and the Pharisees? You know, it's a thing that's in them that if there's too much, or if it's left unattended, it's going to spoil it, okay? And here in the 11th verse, he's calling them out on it and saying, you're worried about the bread, but I'm trying to tell you about something else. And so again, I want to go back to what you and I today, we're not talking about bread, are we? I brought a little physical example, it's not bread, but we're not really talking about that either. We're talking about where we're at spiritually. What are we concerned about? For those of you that weren't in Sunday school this morning, Tim used a phrase, and I almost raised my hand and said, hey, relax, you're about to step on my sermon here. And I got it written at the top of my page, do we get it? And we're going to see in some of the examples we read here that the disciples of Christ really didn't get it, did they? They read the verse this morning in Sunday school that I believe it was Peter. It says one of the disciples whipped his sword out and cut the ear off of the servant of the Lord, a servant of the Pharisees and Sadducees, to protect the Lord. And the Lord said, no, Why did he do that? Because he didn't get it. He didn't get it. And so my question for us today is, do we get it? In your life, do you get it? And hopefully as we go through this, you'll begin to understand what I'm talking about. We're going to jump to verse 13, in Matthew. We're going to stay in Matthew here. And it says, and Jesus came unto the coast of Caesarea Philippi, and he asked his disciples, saying, Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? He's asking his disciples this question. You've heard out there on the street, who are people saying I am? Okay. And then they answer him and say, they said, some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elijah, some Jeremiah, and or one of the prophets. And he said unto them, but whom say ye that I am? And that would be the question for us today if Christ was here. And he asked you. Because he's looking for something a little deeper here, isn't he? This is a test. This was a question to say, hey, are you getting it? And he said unto them, but whom say ye that I am? These disciples have been with him now for 2 years, maybe 2 years plus. Seen the miracles, seen the loaves and the fishes. Okay, and I had to ask myself a question. Sorry, I'll get back to this in a sec. I've been filling a spot in the pew here over 30 years. You know, my experience with Christ is probably pushing 40 years, you know, from the time I was baptized. Where am I when the Lord says, and who do you say that I am? And he's looking for something greater than just, yeah, you're the Lord. No, he wants something more. And it goes along a little bit with what Adam said here too, that we have this testimony. Not from me, not from our parents, from the Lord. And Simon Peter answered and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and said unto him, blessed. Sorry. Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood hath not revealed this unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say unto thee, thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. What does that mean? Was he going to build a church on Peter? Wrong answer. That's not what he's talking about. Upon what rock? Somebody help me out? Revelation, the fact that Jesus Christ is who he says he is, and he can reveal that to you. That he can reveal that to you. Not by the voice of a man. I can say it. We can read it. But there has to be something greater. This conviction to the sinner of our soul that Jesus is the Christ. He is the Messiah. He is the God of heaven and earth. And all things in them are. We're going to jump down to verse 21. Before I do that, I want to just make mention here, you know. The Lord took opportunity to show once again to his disciples that were with him at this time. And of course, one, Peter stepped up and made this declaration. And maybe there was others there who had the same conviction. But the Lord took opportunity to make sure they knew that this is how it has to be. That flesh and blood didn't reveal this to you, but my Father which is in heaven. And for each of you here today, as Adam mentioned in his opening comments here about that you have a testimony of Jesus Christ in your life. In your life. That he's alive. You know, we just went through Easter last weekend and we sing these songs that, you know, he's risen. He's not in the tomb. He's not on the cross. Do you believe it? That he's alive and well and active in your life to the point you allow him to be. Verse 21. It says, from that time forth, beginning Jesus, from that time forth, beginning Jesus to show unto his disciples how he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and raised again on the third day. So he started telling them right then. He started letting them in on what was going to happen. That here in the near future, that he was going to have to go to Jerusalem and he was going to suffer these things, even death. Let's continue to read a couple more verses. And when Peter took him and began to rebuke him, okay? Again, Peter sounds like he's a pretty strong personality of a guy. And he's looking at the Lord and he's kind of getting after the Lord. And he said, you know, Peter began to rebuke him, saying, be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. Okay, wait a second. This is the same Peter that just received this of God, that he is the Christ. He is the Son of God. But here Peter's saying, that ain't happening. We're not going to let it happen to you. You're not going to suffer these things and you're not going to be killed. Okay. Verse 23. But he, meaning Christ, turned and said unto him, get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou sufferest not the things of God, but the things of man. And if you don't get anything else out of this sermon, this is it. He still didn't get it. Peter walked with the Lord, received understanding from the Lord, still didn't get it. Why? Because he's a man. He's human. We want to cling to the flesh. We don't want someone we love and trust to tell us, oh, by the way, I'm going to get killed here next month. No, we're going to prevent it. I got some kind of deadly disease. I'm going to die. No, we'll figure out some way to prevent it. He didn't get it. God's will is not always my will. I'm going to just guess that it usually isn't my will. You know, and my will is probably very rarely God's will. So the question is, do we get it? Can we see it individually in our own life? Are we on board with what the Lord's trying to do? Or, like me most of the time, off on my own safari? You know, I'm going to accomplish this so I can serve the Lord in this way. Well, maybe that's not what the Lord wants me to do. It's about submission. It's about humility. It's about finding what it is that the Lord wants us to do and being ready and willing to do that. We're going to jump one more time here. 24th verse, and it says, and then Jesus come unto his disciples, if any man come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. You know, Peter had an idea that this is the way it's going to be. I'm going to preserve the Lord at any cost. But the Lord was trying to tell him something, and he's trying to tell us something. It's not your cross. It's not your gospel. It's his. He wants you to have a part of it. He wants you involved in the work. He wants you taking up your part. But he wants it. He's in control of it. You know, there's a, I don't know if this is a good example, but example, I really find myself very frustrated in my work a lot of times. And that is you know, I'm doing a job right now. We're in a sheetrocking phase of a project, about 7,000 square feet. The guys had, it'll be pushing 700 sheets of rock to hang. And there's always little areas of the project. Oh, you can't do that. The plumber's not quite done. Oh, not an electrician. Oh, they changed their mind. They want a window over there. You know, there's always little holdups. But at the same time, I'm telling the drywall contractor, hurry up and get done. I got to get this moving. I got a schedule to meet, you know. And so I'll tell him, listen, I got a plan. I want you to rock this wall, and this wall. And I want you to jump over there and rock those four walls. And I want you to go. I come back, he's rocked over where the plumber is supposed to be working. You know, I go in the next room, he's rocking. Oh, we're not ready in here. I haven't had the inspector look at it. Well, you told me to rock everything. Very frustrating that my plan is not necessarily everybody else. The other 20 guys I got on the job, not necessarily their plan. They have a plan in their own head. And the plan is to get the job done, but maybe they don't see the big picture like I do. It's my job to make sure everything's coordinated, everything's in its place, and the end product is good. And I feel like that with the Lord, you know. He sees the big picture. I just have a little teeny tiny piece of it. But if I want to go over there and do someone else's piece, because that's what I want to be doing right now, I'm not fitting in the plan. And that's what he was kind of telling Peter here, you know. He's saying, if you're willing to deny yourself, deny what you want to do, deny your claim to glory, deny your wealth, whatever it is, and take up your cross and follow him. Let's keep moving. I want to read a couple more verses here. The 25th verse, and it says, for whosoever shall save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life for my sake shall find it. And for what is a man profiteth if he gain the whole world and lose his soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in his glory of his Father with his angels, and then shall he reward every man according to his works. Again, this is not our plan. This is not what up to us, you know. And we can get off, and we talked a little bit in Sunday school about wealth and money and that kind of thing, and how sometimes it's a detriment to people to have too much money. And here, you know, the Lord's asking, what are you willing to trade for your soul? Your own desires in life? Where you want to go? Where you want to live? Is that worth it? Some grandiose job making lots of money? Is it worth it? I'm not saying you can't do any of those things, but it needs to be in the Lord's plan. It needs to be in the Lord's plan and in the Lord's time. Maybe at a certain time in your life, it's not a good idea for you. But 20 years later, maybe it's fine. So we have to be willing to submit to the Lord's will. We're going to jump over to the 18th chapter of Matthew. Think. First verse. Again, we're asking ourselves the question, do we get it? Do you understand what the Lord is trying to communicate to us in this day when he was on the earth and today? 18th chapter, first verse. And at that same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them. And we could continue to read, and we may read another verse or two, but the thing that got me on this was, why did we ask the question? Why did they ask the question? And why I'm saying that, and I hope you guys are thinking, like I said, sometimes my ability to communicate is not the best. If you're asking that question, you're not thinking correctly. It'd be like me saying, okay, here, let me look out here. Who's the greatest in the Church of Christ in the Phoenix local? No. Why? Why are we thinking like a man? Like a human being that says, am I better than my neighbor? Am I going to have more of an inheritance in the kingdom? Because I was baptized when I was 12 instead of when I was 60. Wrong question. Wrong question. We're not thinking in the way that God thinks. We're thinking like a man. Do I get more? Do I get the biggest piece of pie? I'm going to tell a little something about my own personality. Last night, some of us went to a girls' choir thing. It was a dinner fundraiser, and they have an auction, and you can bid on stuff, and it's kind of a fun thing. You use quarters to bid on it, and if you they draw your number, I'm not sure the real thing about it. It was kind of a fun thing, and it's to raise money for the girls' choir. Well, I put quarters in the pot for stuff I didn't want because I just wanted to get something. You know, and I obviously went there to give them the quarters. But that's human nature. And it was funny because Tony had two numbers. And I told him, Tony, I'll put quarters in for you too so you can use both your numbers instead of just one of them. So he looks at me. I mean, it's like the thing you're going to get is for a one time at the hairdresser. And he looks at me. I'm like, I'm in. I got you covered, you know, because I just wanted to get something. And so I spent every quarter I had and didn't get one thing. And it served me right. You know, I didn't care, obviously. It was there for a fundraiser for the, and we had a good time doing it. But the point is, that's our nature. We're competitive. We want something our neighbor doesn't have. We want something maybe better than our neighbor already has. That's who we are. That's not thinking as God thinks. Do we get it? Do we understand the very core message of the gospel of Christ? His disciples at this time, you know, a few months, maybe a month prior to his death and resurrection, in many aspects, still didn't get it. So I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad. They walked with him. They talked with him. They ate with him daily for 3 years, maybe more. I don't know. And they still didn't get it. Like I said, I've only been at this 40 years, and I still don't get it. But the point is, are we working towards that understanding on each little aspect of our life? Do we begin to think as the Lord thinks? Do we begin to understand? Obviously, we're never going to fully think as He thinks. He's far above us in all things. But He can bring us to a point that our judgment, our understanding are after His pattern, after His example. And so when His disciples here are asking who's the greatest in the kingdom, they're flawed. They're flawed already. I think I'm going to skip on. We're going to go to Matthew, the 20th chapter. As you can tell, most of my verses this morning are out of the book of Matthew. Unusual for me, but just the way it turned out. We're starting verse 1 again. It says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a householder, which went out early in the morning and hired laborers unto the vineyard." Hopefully all you know where this is going. It'd be like me going out, and it kind of reminded me as I was reading through this, a lot of places in the world today, if I wanted a job, I wanted something to do for the day, I'd go out and stand in the market, go out and stand somewhere, and somebody come by and hire you for the day. You know, here, if I need someone on my job for a day, I pick up the phone and call one of those day labor places, and they'll send me a guy for the day. It's difficult to do in my line of work, but we have done it in the past. Let's continue to read. "And when he had agreed with the labor for a penny a day, he sent him into the vineyard. And when he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, he said unto them, Go ye into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way." They went into the vineyard. "And again he went out about the sixth and the ninth hour and did likewise." So this guy is recruiting a lot of people to go work in his vineyard. "And he went way early, sun up in the morning, and got some. And he went back, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning. He went back at noon. He went back at 2. In verse 6, and it says, "And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing idle, and said unto them, Why stand ye here all day idle? Then they unto him became, No man hath hired us." That's what they say. No one's hired us. We've stood here all day. No one came and hired us. "He saith unto them, Go ye into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that ye shall receive. So when the night had come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto the steward, Call the laborers, and give them their hire, beginning from the last to the first." So the guys that were hired at the 11th hour, they're going to get paid first, and everybody else down the way. And ninth verse, and it says, "And when they had come, about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny." Do you see a problem coming here? It says, "But when the first, they supposed that they should receive more. And they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house, saying, These last wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal with us, which have borne the burden of the heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, Friend, I do thee no wrong. Dost thou not agree with me for a penny? And take what's thine is, and go thy way, and I will give unto thee less even as unto thee, last even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for a man to do what I will with my own? Thine eye evil because I am good?" Okay. So what about this parable? Every guy come, bunch of laborers come. Some come early in the morning, some come midday, some come last hour of the day. Here comes the good man of the vineyard and pays them all a penny. Is that fair, Jared? Not in our way of thinking, is it? Not in our way of thinking at all. There's been times as I've worked over the years that I'm working next to a guy that I know is making more money than I am, and I'm doing more work than he is. But you know what I tell myself when I start feeling bad about it? I agreed to work for what I'm working for. It doesn't matter what he's making. My human side of me wants to argue that point, but it doesn't matter. And it keeps my attitude much better. But in this case, a little different. Some of these guys worked 12 hours, and they made a penny. And others of them worked 1 hour, and they made a penny. Is that fair, Mary? In our human way of thinking, that is not fair, is it? It's not fair at all. But the point here, and obviously the good man of the vineyard is the Lord. And the vineyard is where we're at today. You know, and some of us may be baptized, come to an understanding of the gospel when we're 70 years old. Do you not receive eternal life? Sure you do. And so again, and the only reason I read this, it's another illustration that we don't think how God thinks. We don't see the big picture. All I can see is I've been working for 12 hours and this guy's only been working for an hour. I should make 12 times as much as he made. Stand to reason? Okay. But the last verse, or the next to the last verse, is really the key here. And it says, is it not lawful for me to do what I will with my own? Salvation belongs to the Lord. Whom he gives it to is up to him. We ought to feel blessed that we get to work 12 hours of the day, that I may spend 60, 70 years of my life as a part of the gospel. I had 70 blessed years, where some others may had struggled and a lot of difficulties in their life and came into the gospel later in life. And they only had 20 or 30 blessed years of being able to enjoy a fellowship with Christ in this physical life. The important part is that they receive salvation, period. But again, my thought today is, do we get it? Do we begin to think? Do we begin to make our judgments in life based on how Christ would do things? How he looks at us? Do we look at one another, to the bum down there on the street? You know, and I got to be honest with you, I work in South Phoenix or Central Phoenix, and you know, I can't pull up to a gas pump or anything without someone approaching me, or I can see them over there looking at me. I know they're going to approach me, you know, and I'll put that mean face on. And maybe they won't. Maybe they'll come. But that's me again. That's not how the Lord. That soul is just as precious to the Lord as mine or anybody else's. And it should be as precious to me. We must begin to think and make our judgments and our daily decisions based upon what the Lord would do, how he views us, how he views life. What is the goal? Not wealth, not prestige, eternal life. Not just for me, but for everybody else around me. Last time I preached, I kind of threw a challenge out there to you. Anybody remember what it was? I have my soapbox here. I left it at home. It's still in the bag. I can bring it back if I need to. Anybody remember what the challenge was? Invite someone to church. It's still a challenge. Are you concerned about the soul's well-being of the guy you're working alongside? It's easy for us to make a judgment call, isn't it, Jared? When it comes to, I got a guy who works for me, his name is Jaime. A little bit rough around the edges. Do we feel comfortable inviting him to church? I struggle, I'll be honest with you, I struggle because of the position I'm in. I don't want someone to come to church because I'm their boss. I want them to come to church because they want to come to church. You know. But there's a lot of people, I'm not their direct boss. But, you know, I look at them and I think, wonder if this guy would be able to actually make it an hour without saying a four-letter word. You know, that's not my call to make. Salvation's not mine to give. It's the Lord's. We just have to trust that He can do it. We have to think. We have to get on board with what He's trying to accomplish. I need to get on down the road here. Another verse that goes along with this, and this convicts me every time I read it. Every time I read it. That's going to be in Luke in the 22nd chapter. And the 31st verse. And this is at the time when they had come and taken Christ. The Sadducees and the chief priests had taken Christ and taken Him to Pilate's hall and had begun this struggle that would end His life. And in the 31st verse, this is just prior to that time, and the Lord's still speaking with His disciples. And it says, "And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan desires to have you, that he may sift you as wheat." And this is another thing that we need to understand. Just like we need to understand the Lord has a plan, if we're willing to submit to it, He can use us. He's standing by waiting if we're willing to get involved. But we need to also understand Satan desires to have you. If you're sitting in this room today, you're a threat to Satan's kingdom. And my desire for you is that you're even a bigger threat. That you're a total threat to His kingdom because you're active and you're doing what the Lord wants you to do. Satan desires to have you that he may sift you as wheat. We can talk about that, but I don't want to wait. 32nd verse. But I have prayed for thee, this is Christ speaking, I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. Okay, again, he's talking to one of his disciples who is very faithful, who has been with him for 3 years, and he's saying, I'm praying for you that you don't fail here. And then he makes even another statement. And when thou art converted, strengthen your brother. Okay. Peter was still, the Lord could see that he was still struggling with this. And it wasn't just him, it was all of them. Sorry. The 33rd verse. We'll see. He's going to basically stick his foot in his mouth again. And this is his answer, Simon's answer back to him. And he said, and he said unto him, Lord, I am ready to go with thee, both to prison and to death. Okay, I can see some of us telling the Lord that today, if he would stand here. The bad guys are outside going to take him away. He said, no, we're not going to let him take you, and we'll go with you. We're on your side. We're on board. 34th verse. And he said, and this is the Lord answered back to it, Peter said, and I tell thee, Peter, the cock shall not crow this day before thou hast thrice denied that ye know me. Okay. And we know what happened after that. That they took him, and before the next day came, here this servant who chopped off the ear of the guards that came to take him, this servant who has made this total declare, I'll go to prison with you and I'll even go to death with you, has denied him 3 times before the sun come up the next day. And that's why I said, this convicts me, because talk is cheap. It's easy to be a good Christian sitting in church. It's out there in the world as we struggle, isn't it? But I only read this. Obviously Peter was a wonderful man and a very dedicated servant of the Lord. But it shows that he is like us, or we are like him, in as much that we have these human traits that want to make these statements, that want to in our desire to do the right thing, but we don't always understand fully what the Lord's will is, you know, and. Was it the Lord's will that Peter go to jail with him, go to prison with him, and be crucified with him? No, that wasn't. Peter's work here had just begun with the death of Christ. That wasn't the Lord's will for him, and the Lord knew it. Peter didn't know it. Peter was ready to end it right there. He said, I will go to death with you. But that wasn't the Lord's design. And so the Lord again tried to tell him, hey, wake up. You're not running the show. I am. You're not the foreman on this job. I am. And so I ask you, do we recognize that? Do we recognize that today, even though Christ crucified, been resurrected, lives eternally in the heavens with his Father, is active in your life and mine today, and that we're on board? Do we get it? Do we understand where we're headed? What we're supposed to be doing? Or are we just trudging forward like Peter and say, no, I'm going to do it this way. That's my nature. Okay. I'm going to read one more verse. Sorry. 3 Nephi. Chapter 6. I'm going to read in chapter 6, starting in the 27th verse. And this was Christ speaking. He says, beware of false prophets who come in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravaging wolves. Again, everything is not always as it appears. We have to be diligent. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorns or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth forth not good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of the Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, have I not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have cast out devils? And in thy name done many marvelous works, wonderful works? And then I will profess to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. What in the world is that talking about? What's that talking about? It's kind of confusing in some ways. I love that verse of Scripture myself. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit. And an evil tree cannot bring forth good fruit. What's a tree? What are we talking about here? Brother Jim? A human, a person, ourself. If we in the core, down deep, is evil, we're not going to bring forth good fruit. If we're consumed of ourself and not those around us, not serving the Lord, we're not going to bring forth good fruit. And likewise, someone who is, who gets it, who understands, doesn't mean they're perfect, doesn't mean you're going to have a bad day, but for the most part in your life, you're going to bear fruit that is good. I had a quick example here, and I didn't want to get it. I almost just pitched it, and I thought, well, that's not really fair. I made you guys stare at a fries bag the whole time, and I didn't even show you what's in it. Anybody know what those are? Citrus? Correct. Can I put you on the spot, Jose? I do that because Jose's a landscape guy. Can you tell me what kind of citrus that is? He's cheating. No. There's three different ones. I'll give you a clue. They all have little fruits on them, don't they?
Yeah, well, it looks like lime.
They all look like lime right now. There's three different ones. Sometimes if it's lemon, you can squeeze that leaf and you can smell it. At this point, it's hard to tell, isn't it? I know because I know which tree I cut them off of. Otherwise, I'd have a hard time. I want to read this verse again. Many will say in that day, Lord, Lord, have I not prophesied in your name, in thy name? And in thy name cast out devils, and in thy name done many marvelous works. And what does he say? And I will profess unto thee, I never knew you, you that work iniquity. What have we been talking about today? Not everything that appears is what you think it is. Not every physical thing that you see, you have to have something more. What did the Lord, and that's what he said, this is a little abstract, so stay with me. What did the Lord say to Peter? Blessed art thou, for flesh and blood hath not declared this unto thee. What did we just read a minute ago? You know, there's going to be false prophets. There's going to be deception. One of these is a grapefruit. One of these is a Arizona sweet orange, and one's a tangelo. Pretty much all look the same. And, of course, as they mature and truly produce the fruit, you can tell, can't you? Nice yellow grapefruit, an orange, and a tangelo look all three very much different. And my point is for us here, we have to have fruit. I can say, hey, I'm a Christian over here. Over here, I'm a Christian. Okay, what does that mean in our day and age? Okay, we all work with people we know who claim Christianity and do whatever they want to do in life. They don't have any fruit, just a sign. We all know other people probably we work with that do have fruit. I know a guy who's an Orthodox gentleman, but you know what? He lives it. And you can tell. He's very kind. He's very exacting in his way he speaks, everything. Very nice man. Very nice man. We have to produce fruit for who we are, and it has to be recognizable to God in this verse of Scripture when we said, you know, everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of the Father. I can produce all kinds of fruit. These people here said, hey, we cast out devils in your name. We did many marvelous works in your name. And the Lord said, I don't know you. I don't know you. Why? Because it wasn't according to what he said, that doeth the will of the Father. So just today when you go away from here thinking, man, he really lost it today. Just if you can grasp hold of that, what I'm thinking, not what I'm thinking, what you're thinking yourself, what I'm thinking may not be what God has for me. May not. Am I doing the will of the Father? Or am I doing the will of Andy? Am I seeking to build the kingdom? Or am I seeking to build my own kingdom? That's the question. Thank you.